This is Playing with Fire.
He's at the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown!
3 seconds remaining. 2-1. Shots up. It's good!
Here's the pitch, the swing. It's a long fly ball. It's going, going, it's gone! Revealing the secrets of the elite athlete. But be careful, you're playing with fire.
Freestyle. Hey everybody, you're tuned in to Playing with Fire, and I'm your host, Dr. Bill. How you doing? I think we have a great show ahead today. Reclaim the Game, Sport and Virtue. We're talking about sportsmanship and, you know, ways to improve, obviously, your physical abilities in many different ways. So let's get started with the show. Listen up.
Well, welcome everybody to Playing with Fire. Today we have, from my perspective, a very exciting guest, someone that has taken a unique look at sport and virtue and ethics and morality. And her name is Dr. Sharon Stoll, and she is a professor at the University of Idaho. And she has a very interesting background. She's author of over 8 books, including Who Says It's Cheating and Sports Ethics, Applications for Fair Play. She has been a consultant to many important groups, such as the United States Navy, United States Air Force, Idaho Bar Association, American Bar. I know she's done some work, and maybe you could tell us more about this as we get going, with, was it University of Georgia?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah. And then United States Military Academy. She's been on, featured on Nightline, ESPN Sports Center, Chatline with ESPN, Fox Sports, and so forth. Mother of 2 girls, I'll mention them, Amanda and Rachelle. I'm just so happy to have you, and I appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's get to it. I part of this program is about trying to, figure out what we can do, one, to understand what's going on in sport today. And as we too often see it, we learn about the vice, we see the headlines and so forth, and that tends to then become the role model, and we see, the kind of behavior that we really don't want and don't like drift down to college, high school, and even down to the youth level. You've done some really interesting work here, and I'm wondering if you could just take a few moments and just tell us what you've done, specifically with some of the studies that you've been involved with. I think that would be of great interest.
Well, people are always interested in the data because it's interesting. I mean, we started in 1987 when a graduate student asked me a question: do you think athlete populations are as morally developed as a normal population? And being a former athlete coach, my answer was, of course they are. I mean, how could you even ask that silly of a question?
Right.
And she said to me, have you read anything in moral development? And I just sort of looked at her, and I did a lot of ethics and a lot of philosophy, but not necessarily application in moral development. So I said, no, I haven't. So she asked me to read stuff, and I did. And she came back later after I got it read, and she said, do you think they are morally developed as much normal population? I said, I want to say yes, but I don't know. I really don't know. So it took us a couple years to develop an instrument, and we went out and started measuring moral reasoning. And moral reasoning is applied to what we say we do. And that's the interesting thing, is we say we teach character, but actually we really don't. But we say we teach character.
I was going to just so that everybody understands that may be listening to it, because we have a wide audience here that could be, down to high school and all the way up. Can you tell everybody a little bit what you mean by moral development?
Well, moral development has to do with our cognitive processes as well as behavior. But on our end, we're just looking at the reasoning process. And reasoning is one part of how we learn morality. Another is we might be born with some sense of it.
Right.
We also have role models that are very, very important, and then the environment, and that all plays into actually how we behave in relation to others. And morality has to do with how we treat other people. That's the bottom line. It's
right.
How we view other people. And morality has to do with those important virtues of being honest and responsible and respectful. That's what it's all about. So can we capture that? Well, not really, but we can capture some of the reasoning process because that's a part of it. That in itself is not totally moral development because somebody can think and reason at a very high level and just be an awful person. So
right.
It's just one little piece, all right? And it isn't
right.
the defining piece, but it's one important piece. So it took us 2 years to grab an instrument that measured what we say we do in the mission statements of schools and universities and places, wherever it might be. We
right.
say we build character. Okay,
right.
Now if you say you build it, what do you do? And then the response was we did general surveys of institutions and mission statements. And then what they say is we build, they don't use the word moral character, but we build sportsmanship. We build individuals
right.
who understand fair play, and that has to do with respect, right? Fair play
right.
and honesty and all those kinds of things. So we built an instrument that we captured that. And in a statistical terms, it took us 2 years. We know our instrument's valid. We now have examined over 80,000 athletes and other populations. We have a very good instrument that
wow,
captures
great.
What we say we do. And through the original studies, we found out is what we say we do is not what we do at all. We really don't develop the reasoning process about these things at all.
Now, that's interesting because just what you're saying is really where we're focused, which is this idea that sports should be a means for developing virtue. Now, it doesn't have to be because it's just a generic thing. It could be like taking, music. We could take theater. We could take anything. But we see sport, at least historically in our country, as this sort of environment that's going to develop virtue and morals and good behavior and help somebody to become a good person, ultimately. So what you're saying is that's not happening.
Well, in order for athletics to exist in the educational community from day one, from 1870, 80, whatever, when it first started becoming part of the university, college, high school experience, it was always argued why we have it is the laboratory experience in which you actually put together all these wonderful virtues and values that you learn in the university or college or high school setting, and you put it on the field. And that's where
right.
you can actually apply this thing, this laboratory setting.
Yes.
And that has
yes.
always been the argument.
Yeah, right.
and nobody has ever said, oh, we do athletics because we build motor skills, right? We develop
right.
people to throw well. It's never been about that.
You're right.
There's some things about fitness, but it's never been about those things. It's always been about the ideal champion notion that this
yeah.
builds character and supports all the wonderful values and virtues that we in education are about. And
that's
so,
right.
And unfortunately, it is not played out in an instrument of reasoning. Now,
what is the disconnect then?
Well, I think what's always happened is that I could be very philosophic here, but I think there is.
That's okay. Go ahead.
There's this big disconnect between mind body, and it's always been this notion that what we do on the field is some mystical thing about this bodily movement type of thing, and we really haven't looked at it in a very critical sense. That what is the relationship to my being able to play ball in relationship to my being and my thinking and my reasoning? We have not done that.
Right.
And we have gone so far away from that, we now hire individuals who have no experience or any background in education. They may
right.
be somebody who played the ball. They played the game well. I mean, that guy was a great athlete. So that person can be a coach. So
right.
we have taken the notion that coaches can be anyone who has really experienced the sport as an athlete, was great at it, and then put it not that not I'm not decrying that that's not important because that is very, very important. But I'm saying that we really haven't been as serious about the application of education to sport in the sport experience that we should have.
What's hot? There was a recent movie that came out by Disney called The Greatest Game. It was a golf movie, and it was pretty good. It's about kind of a legendary golfer from Great Britain called Harry Varnden, and there was a U.S. Young man by the name of Francis Wiemet. And the story goes on about the lives of these two individuals are sort of played out. In the end, they come together as they end up competing with one another. And both of them, what's interesting is it brings in this class sort of thing. And when I say by class is, you know, the socioeconomic backgrounds of individuals. And both of them came from, you know, not much money and so forth, and sort of the blue blood, upper crusties, if you will. You know, all they were always seen sort of on the outside, and it was only because of their golf skill that they even had the opportunity of being in contact. And, you know, certainly for Harry Varnon, it was a case where he thought maybe he was actually being accepted into that rank, when he found that really there was a lot of just, you know, hubris and pride and a real sense of privilege, if you will, that he just would never belong to. And that, you know, was something he struggled with, it seemed from the movie at least, all his life. And then Francis, we met, dad was from Canada, I think his mom was from Ireland. He just had a lot of natural skill and ability and really seemed to love the game of golf and actually idolized Harry Varnon and went out and continued to play and practice and worked his way up and actually got the opportunity to compete in the U.S. Open. Doesn't do well and things fall out for him and looks like he's about to give up the game and one circumstance leads to another and he's actually brought back into it. And I won't go through it again, like try not to ruin the end of a story for you, but it's an inspiring story. And basically what it's about sportsmanship, and it's playing with honor, and that playing with honor is more important than winning at all cost. And they do a nice job of conveying that, and it's kind of exciting and inspirational. And again, you know me, I love these true stories. So check out The Greatest Game. Praying Twice. What I look for in a song is obviously a great voice. I you know, that's the first thing. I then look for the lyrics. You know, what are they actually saying? And I try to find lyrics that somehow tie into a little bit of the idea of search or journey, virtue. You know, something positive, hopefully, that, you know, all of us can be, you know, sort of inspired with through the music and obviously the beat of the song and so forth. And I'm going to look for some different genres to include. But that's basically what I'm doing when I try to pick out these songs. So today, this is going to be called Wind and Wings, and it's by Derek Klieg.
things I'll almost make it home.
Well, that was Derek Clegg, and you can catch him at GarageBand.com. His song was Wind and Wings, or you can check it out on our show notes at ReclaimTheGame.com. It's your call. Well, I got a question this week from Elizabeth. I believe it was Hershey, Pennsylvania. I'm a runner. Sometimes I have knee and back pain, and someone said since my feet roll to the inside too much, I need something called an orthotic. What are they? What do they do? And will they help me? Well, I'm not going to prescribe medicine here simply because I'm not a doctor, at least an MD doctor, but I will tell you a little bit of what they are and what they do. You know, the structure of the body is really important, and when you're running, specifically running, there's a lot of force every time you land on the ground. And so if you kind of think of a, I don't know, like building blocks, if you will, from the ground up, you have all these bones and you have all these joints. And if they're lined up just right and the musculature is properly developed and so forth, all this force gets spread out over your body. And so your body can absorb the force fairly easily. But sometimes, you know, the way we're built or God made us, you know, certain parts of us will be at different angles. And sometimes those angles are places where a lot of force can, if you can think of this idea, where it gathers. So when your ankle rolls a little bit to the inside, it means that the force is maybe not going to be applied in maybe the smoothest way or diminished as easily as possible. And so what an orthotic is basically is they take a mold of your foot. And what they do then is they create this kind of insert that's going to go in your shoe, and it's adjusted. They put a little bit, you know, kind of like build-ups on them in order to bring your foot back up into an ideal position or close to that ideal position. And what that does then is it kind of lines everything up and diminishes these forces. So sometimes when you what's called overpronation, where you roll towards the inside, you can put too much force sometimes on your knees or your back, and those are the places that you mentioned, and that is a source of pain, and usually it doesn't come right away. You know, running specifically, especially distance running, is something that happens over time. You have an injury that builds up from like a wear and tear over time, and so that amount of force from your running, the mileage that you're putting in, may be contributing to your knee and back pain. So yes, I'd say, you know, what should you do? Would they work for you? I'm thinking you certainly want to check it out. So if there's an athletic trainer you can go to, or often a physical therapist, a sports medicine physical therapist trained individual would be good, or going to an orthopedic surgeon who usually has a podiatrist or somebody they would refer to. A podiatrist is a foot doctor who looks at foot and ankle. But you want somebody that looks at the whole body, you know, from hips back all the way down to the ground to see how those forces are applied. And I hope that'll help you out. And I look forward to you following up with me. Let me know how that goes or if I've answered the question. And it's the listener feedback line. I'd love to get your comments so I can put them on air. 206-203-1301 or write to me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com. And I hope to hear from you soon.
Skills and drills.
One of the things I want to talk about today on this section of skills and drills is the idea of mobility. Could also call it flexibility. It's one of those ones that nobody really likes to do. It's sort of torture. It's one of those things you think coaches make up to give you just beforehand. Not many people like to stretch or do some kind of, again, mobility-type exercises, but they really are critical to performance. I've talked a little bit of, you know, just very little bit about nutrition in the past, but it's one of those things like nutrition that is a building block. In other words, if you don't have mobility, you are really limited in a lot of ways. So, for example, just as far as your technique goes, if you're trying to master certain kinds of technique, whatever your sporting event may be, you can't do it if you don't have proper mobility. It means you can't even get your body in the position. So how could you possibly, you know, try to will yourself into it when your muscles can't and ligaments and so forth, tendons, aren't able to get you in that position? So mobility is actually key to proper technique. And as we talked about also in the past, injuries come about from lack of mobility. So if you aren't properly stretched and your muscles aren't loosened up in a sufficient way to allow your joints to move in a proper way, you're going to find that over time you end up with some kind of injury that really could have been avoided. And you know, sometimes that's how hamstring injuries, you know, you see people pull up with a hamstring strain. Some of that comes from fatigue, but also some of it just comes from, you know, inflexibility. So I wanted to talk a little bit about mobility today. And there's basically three kinds of mobility. There's active, passive, and kinetic. And what active is basically where you're contracting certain muscles to help you stretch. So, for example, if I'm sitting on the ground with my legs straight out, and I pull my body down towards my legs. So in a way, I'm kind of contracting my stomach muscles and I'm contracting my hip flexors and my quads to help pull me towards my legs. Then that's called active stretching. I'm stretching my hamstrings, the back of my legs, but I'm using the other muscles to help me get there. Passive stretching is a little bit different. That's where you're not actually contracting muscles to help pull you into the position to get the stretch. It's where somebody else is perhaps helping you, or you're using your own body weight just to kind of hang and using that weight to create the stretch. But one of the interesting things about passive stretching is that there's something called PNF, and it stands for proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. Ooh. What that basically is, and it works very well, by the way, is that let's say I'm laying on the ground and I put up my leg and I have a partner put their shoulder on my calf muscle and begin to push my leg back towards my, head and chest, at least in that direction, maybe not that far. And they start to do that. Obviously, at some point, I'm going to feel a stretch. I'm going to say, ooh, okay, I'm feeling a good stretch right there. Then they hold that position, and what I do is I actually press. I contract my hamstring muscle, the one that's being stretched, and actually press it into their shoulder, just gently. Constant pressure for maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds, and then I relax, and as soon as I relax, they move forward just a little bit. And by that contraction and relaxing of the muscle, it actually helps me to stretch a little bit further than I might normally be able to do just stretching on the ground. So you might want to talk to your coach about that or athletic trainer and have them maybe show you how to do it, but that can be an effective way of helping increase your range of motion, meaning how far your joints can move. And then the kinetic I talked about is more momentum-oriented. So like swinging your leg, like I was a straddle high jumper, I used to be able to kick my leg straight up over the top of my head. As a matter of fact, I could kick 8 feet without leaving the ground. Tells you how tall I am and how long my legs are, but that was pretty good. I could do a full split on the ground. Trust me, today I couldn't even come close to that. But those are the kinds of things that mobility can do. So you got this active, passive, kinetic. And what's really interesting about it is that, certain things make a difference in your stretching. So, for example, the time that you stretch. For example, stretching in the morning is much harder for your body, just the way our bodies are designed. They don't stretch as well as they do later in the day. If you are exposed to cold temperature, you might be, compared to your normal, 18 inches, 12 inches, depending on the movement, less than what you normally are. Whereas if you had just come out of a warm bath or you're stretching in a warm bath or a warm whirlpool, it may just be the opposite in terms of how much stretch you can get. So the type of, stretching and certainly fatigue, if you haven't realized this yet, when you get tired, if you're running or whatever that might be, your muscles tend to also tighten up. So it's important to understand the couple things that affect your training with stretching, and that is the specificity of your training, that you're trying to do what is very particular or specific to your movements. You want some of that, overload, if you will, to take you to where you need to normally be and beyond, because you're not going to be able to maintain your normal range of motion if you can't regularly get to it. And, reversibility, just so you know, if you don't stretch and, stop over a period of time, you don't lose it instantly, but you do start to lose it fairly quickly over like a course of weeks. You'll begin to revert back to where you were before. And so things like raising your body temperature, starting off with some jogging and so forth to try to get the muscles warmed up, then active, slow, sustained kind of stretching is good, around the joints. Then some passive stretching like that PNF I talked about. Then follow that up with maybe some kinetic exercises like leg swings and some other kind of movements maybe specific to your sport. And then, again, working on specific movements that go with your technique. Those kinds of things can help you. But remember, mobility is something that you really do have to work at. It seems invisible. You don't normally notice it until you don't have it. So let's try to work on that.
Iron will.
One of the things I don't often talk about is this idea of relaxation, how to relax. And the reason I don't do that, sometimes it gets overblown. We talk about relaxation too much in sports psychology, and that leads us to think that's a solution for everything, just relax. But it is important. It is a good tool. It is a good skill. And I just like to share with you a little bit, how do you go about, you know, relaxing? I mean, that sounds obvious, just let go, I guess. But let me tell you how to do it, because there is a way to more effectively, you know, relax all of your muscles. But if you were to lay down, maybe like in a moderately dark room on the floor or wherever you might be, don't listen to this if you're driving. Don't want you passing out on me at the wheel. But there's a thing called progressive relaxation. And what you do is, by laying on the floor, you close your eyes, and first you just put your attention on your breathing. And it may sound like a simple thing, but just putting your mind on actually paying attention to sort of the rise and fall of your stomach as you're breathing really begins to slow yourself down. You begin to feel your body. And as you feel your body, you begin to feel the weight of your body. And just, you know, if you think about this idea or try to feel this, you'll actually almost start to sense gravity pulling you down into the ground. And what you do is, on every breath you're taking, you begin to feel your body sort of being pulled into the ground. You know, feel yourself literally becoming kind of heavier. And as you're doing that, you can then begin to check your body. And as you go through it, so for example, let's just take your left arm. One way of being sure that you've completely relaxed your left arm is, let's say, for example, you make a tight fist and you tighten up your whole arm, including your fist, and you hold it and you make it as tight as you possibly can, and then you let it go completely after holding it for maybe about 5 seconds. And when you let it go, as you breathe out, feel that breath actually go through that limb. And then you can do the same thing with all your other limbs, including your legs. Tighten up like your right quad as tight as you possibly can. Your whole leg, tight, 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 tight. Hold it for about 5 or so seconds. Tight, 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 super tight. And then, boom, let it go. And when you let it go again, the next breath you take, as you exhale, feel the breath actually moving down through your leg, almost like you feel like you're breathing out through the bottoms of your feet. And after doing this for a few moments, you will really start to feel your whole body completely let go and relax. And you're going to say, I feel like I'm glued to the floor. Now you say, what is the benefit of this? Is it going to help me when I'm actually competing? Well, not necessarily then, but what you're beginning to do is teach your body how to relax and how to use your breathing to help you relax. Eventually, what you want to work towards is where within one breath, you can actually center yourself and completely relax in an appropriate way for competition. And the way you can do that, if you're just standing up right now, is you take in a deep breath. Do it with me now. Take in a deep breath. Hold it. And let it out super slow. And as you're letting it out, feel your whole body, your shoulders, everything just sort of coming down towards the center of your stomach, almost like behind your navel. Picture that's the center of your gravity. Picture everything. Do it one more time. Take a really big, deep breath. Hold it. And then let it out real slow, all the way out, and you will feel your whole body becoming centered, more relaxed, in a way your mind will become more focused. And sometimes that's all you need right before you're gonna compete, that one centering breath to kind of gather yourself together and prepare yourself for an all-out best competition.
Soul food.
Well, I've always been a great advocate of trustful surrender to divine providence. We often don't trust God sufficiently. And I just wanted to read you this little thing from a book. It's a little tiny book. I'm a simple person. I guess I like simple things. But there's a book called Trustful Surrender to Divine Providence, The Secret of Peace and Happiness. It's by Father Jean-Baptiste Saint-Jure and also by Saint-Claude de la Colombière. And on page 63, there's a little one-and-a-half-page thing, very small little book, and it's called In Diversity and Disgrace. And it says, we ought to conform the will of God in adversity as well as in prosperity, in humiliation as well as in honor, in disgrace as well as in respect. We should willingly accept all these things being the order of providence, so as to give God by our submission the honor due to him, and at the same time attain without fail our greatest good. When David left Jerusalem to escape the attack of his son Absalom, the Ark of the Covenant was carried after him by the order of Zadok the high priest, so that he might serve as a safeguard for the king in his imminent danger and be a pledge of his safe return. But David told Zadok to take the Ark back, because God would see his return if he so wished it, and then added, But if the Lord shall say to me, Thou pleasest me not, I am withdrawing my favor from you, I will not have you reign longer over my people. I will take away your power and give it to your enemy. Then David said, I am ready. Let him do that which is good before him. We should say the same, any time or whatever the circumstance we find ourselves, and above all, take care not to refuse on the specious pretext that we are not capable of such heroic resignation. God himself will accomplish it in us, provided we do not, oppose or resist his grace. This is the point of a story that Cassian tells about the old man who was attacked by a mob of pagans in Alexandria. He remained calm, unruffled, in spite of the insults and blows. Someone asked him mockingly, "What miracles Christ has worked?" "He has just worked one," the old man replied. "For in spite of all you have done to me, I haven't been angry with you or at least bit upset." Trustful surrender. Let's try it. Well, thanks again for another great show. Again, they fly by for me. I hope they do for you as well, but they just go by so quickly, and I enjoy doing them, and I hope I'm sharing with you some things that'll be a real practical help in terms of making sport a means for developing virtue. I ask you to please go out and help people to know about the website, the reclaimthegame.com. Ask them to go in, look at it, give me their comments, give me feedback, let me know how what you're looking for. And then, you can always call us on the listener line, 206-203-1301, or you can write me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com, and I'll hope to hear from you again soon. Take care and God bless.